Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. In the past few weeks, economic glimmers of hope have emerged with encouraging numbers on the GDP, housing sales, and more. While no one is debating that it's a bleak picture out there for millions of Americans, real debate has begun about whether the Great Recession has bottomed out and recovery has begun. If so, what would this recovery, possibly long, slow, and jobless, really look like? This hour On Point, the American economy and the road back from recession. You can join the conversation. Do you think we've hit bottom? Do you see signs that the economy is turning a corner? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from New York City is John Harwood. He's chief Washington correspondent for CNBC and a political writer for The New York Times. His latest book, co-authored with Gerald Seib, is Pennsylvania Avenue, Profiles in Backroom Power. John Harwood, always nice speaking with you. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Jane.
So new job numbers will be out on Friday. How important is that jobless report?
Well, it's important in a negative way for the Obama administration, and we saw Robert Gibbs, the White House press secretary, yesterday trying to discount for that. The president has been predicting himself that unemployment's going to go over 10%. Gibbs wasn't being specific yesterday. He said it's going to tick up and almost certainly will have several hundred thousand jobs lost. The reason that's such a problem for the administration is that they, in fact, do believe the economy has bottomed out and is in the process of recovery. But as long as joblessness keeps rising, it's difficult for the American people to relate to the idea that we're pulling out of it.
And so then what about the extension of unemployment benefits? Does it appear that the Obama administration will support an extension of those benefits?
I do believe they will. It is one small measure they could take in the direction of continued stimulus for the economy. I think a broad-gauge stimulus package, a second stimulus, which some Democrats have talked about on the Hill, is not in the cards. There's too much concern about spending and deficits, but I think it would be very, very difficult for them not to extend jobless benefits at a time when the rate's headed to 10% or more.
And so at this time, when unememployment heading to 10%, President Obama, Vice President Biden, out in America, full court press this week, trying to whip up optimism in the economy. And what's the tightrope, John, that they have to walk, sounding optimistic but not out of touch with so many Americans that are still really hurting?
You know, Jane, every American president, politician, learned a lesson from George W. Bush and the mission accomplished banner at that on that aircraft carrier. So the last thing that President Obama wants to do is convey the idea that he thinks that we've won. On the other hand, he's got to convey the idea that we're headed in the right direction. There's a big attack going on by conservative critics of his stimulus plan saying it hasn't worked. He's got to say no, even though unemployment's going up, it has worked because it would be much worse without it. That's a difficult argument to make when the rate is rising. So it's not an enviable economic message selling job that the administration has, but they've got to work through it, especially while they're also trying to fight through the health care debate on Capitol Hill.
And so with that as a backdrop, what's the mood in Washington generally, John? Does the president still have the Midas touch when it comes to possible additional spending? You know, mentioned extension of unemployment benefits. You mentioned health care on the horizon. I mean, is he still getting the green light for his initiatives, or is there some pushback in Washington?
Well, he certainly doesn't have the same mojo that he did at the start of the year. He's getting increasing pushback, of course, divisions within the Democratic Party on health care. I still believe that the prospects are decent, that the Democrats will, in fact, enact something in the form of comprehensive health reform before the end of the year, but that's not a certainty. And with the deficit well over $1 trillion this year, it is not going to be easy to come up with significant amounts of new spending to stimulate the economy or for any other purpose, although we have seen, Jane, that with this Cash for Clunkers program, you get certain rifle shots that strike the right chord with the American people.
Right.
That's something that politicians are going to climb onto, and which is what happened in the House of Representatives last week, and I think they'll likely overcome the opposition in the Senate this week.
Hmm. What are the poll numbers telling us, John Harwood? Is the economy starting to chip at President Obama's popularity?
No question about it. His ratings, which were consistently in the 60% range for most of the first 6 months of his presidency, are now in the mid to low 50s. In the NBC Wall Street Journal poll that we conducted last week, he was at 53%, 40% disapproval. That's not all that different from what George W. Bush had in the summer of 2001. We still find, beneath those numbers at focus groups and some other quantitative measurements of how they feel about it, people like Barack Obama. They still see him as a figure of hope, somebody who has a chance to change the country, but they're not quite as buoyant and optimistic as they were at the start of the year.
What about Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke? John, his term expires in January. I know there's a lot of talk in Washington about the White House beginning to look at whether to reappoint or replace him during this economic period. What do you see on the horizon? What's the talk?
I think that's a real choice between a stability pick, one that might reassure the markets, which, by the way, are doing pretty well right now, mm-hmm. versus any president's desire to put his own stamp on the Federal Reserve and on economic policy. If I were a betting man, which I'm not, I would bet that the president would decide to appoint his own person. But I don't think that's a given, and some of that is going to depend on exactly what economic conditions are at the end of the year, which is when he's got to make this decision.
Well, John Harwood is chief Washington correspondent for CNBC, political writer for The New York Times. Always great to have you, John. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Joining me now from New Haven, Connecticut, is Robert Shiller, a professor of economics at Yale University. He collaborated with Carl Case to produce the Case-Shiller Home Price Index, the most widely used database of housing prices in the United States. He's the co-founder and chief economist of Macro Markets, a specialty investment bank that trades in real estate markets. His latest book is Animal Spirits, How Human Psychology Drives the Economy and Why It Matters for Global Capitalism. Robert Shiller, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
And joining me also from Philadelphia is Jeremy Siegel. He's professor of finance at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. He's author of The Future of Investors, Why the Tried and the True Triumph Over the Bold and the New, and Stocks for the Long Run, The Definitive Guide to Financial Markets Returns and Long-Term Investment Strategies. Jeremy Siegel, thank you so much for joining us. Professor Siegel, are you there? Well, Professor Shiller, I'll turn to you first. I'm glad you're here. How do you see the overall health of the U.S. Economy? John Harwood talked about those unemployment numbers going toward 10%. I mean, how do you see generally the U.S. economy stacking up right now?
Well, there's definite signs of improvement. The unemployment rate tends to be a lagging indicator. Mm-hmm. And that means that even when other things are improving, unemployment tends to get worse for a while. I could point, there's a lot of things that are getting a little better. Let's not say a lot better. The second quarter GDP growth was still negative, and we've had four consecutive quarters. You might almost say six, because there was another negative at the beginning of 08. Mm-hmm. So this has been the worst recession since the Great Depression.
And talk about
we
the housing numbers. Talk about the housing number, Professor Shiller.
Jobs.
What about the Case-Shiller Housing Index? Talk about the housing market and how that works into the overall economy.
Well, see, we've been through some interesting experiences. I hate this. That's not so good experiences. We had the biggest housing bubble in the history of this country, starting in the 1990s and peaking in 2006. And since its peak in early 2006, it's been going down steadily every month, according to our indices, until the latest month, which was May, and it went up. Mm. Now, part of that is because of seasonality, because summer is a strong month. But it's definitely very important when 3 years of declines is suddenly reversed.
Mm. How do you square the numbers, though, Professor Shiller? Because we keep hearing home sales are up. You mentioned the Case-Shiller Housing Index went up for the first time in years. But, you know, housing sales are up, so are foreclosures. Recovery has begun, but unemployment is pushing double digits. I mean, for the average American, there seem to be a lot of conflicting statistics. Are there not?
Well, yes. We're seeing positive signs. GDP is still declining, but declining at a lower rate. That's the kind of positive signs we're seeing. To me, it all comes down to whether this is really an ordinary recession that is in its final phases of ending, or, and I worry about this, it's a respite in what may be a difficult economic situation for years to come.
A respite. With that as a backdrop, let's hear from CBS Face the Nation program on Sunday with Bob Schieffer. White House Economic Advisor Larry Summers said that the president's policies are heading off further economic disaster.
6 months ago, when the president took office, we were talking about whether recession would become depression.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we are talking about when recession is going to end. That is a tribute to the strength of the policies that have been put in place and the expectation that they are going to have growing impact.
Professor Robert Shiller, you say we might just be in a respite period here. Is Larry Summers overstating the impact of the Obama administration's policies or not?
Well, I think the stimulus, it's not just Obama, it's Bush. These policies were begun. Remember, Bush had a tax rebate, and Bush administration, well, the Congress and Bush did the TARP bailout program. So these measures, and Bernanke has been over this whole period creating a lot of support for credit markets. All of these policies together have definitely helped the economy. And the bailouts have, notably the bailout of Fannie and Freddie, which failed, and we managed to keep the housing market from going into a worse disaster.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about a way out of economic crisis and whether recovery is in the cards in this country right now. We're joined this hour by Robert Shiller, professor of economics at Yale University, and in just a moment, Jeremy Siegel, professor of finance at the Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania. National Economic Council Director Larry Summers told NBC Meet the Press on Sunday that the recession is waning, but the job market would be slow to catch up.
Now, the jobs picture is going to be serious for a long time to come. The best that can be said so far is the rate at which we're losing jobs is declining. But there, too, the picture is improving.
And on ABC's This Week on Sunday, host George Stephanopoulos asked Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner about unemployment.
Should Americans expect that more jobs are going to start getting created this year or not?
I think you're going to see what you're going to see first is growth turn positive. And then you're going to see the pace of job losses slow materially further. They've already slowed significantly, as you said. They're going to slow materially further. But again, most private forecasters, and let's use their judgment, suggest you're going to see unemployment start to come down maybe beginning the second half of next year.
Professor Robert Shiller, Yale University. Do you agree, Secretary Geithner?
Well, unemployment typically continues to go up after, as I said, after a recession. The real question in my mind is whether a basic business confidence will return, or animal spirits, as George Akerlof and I emphasized in our recent book. Mm-hmm. We have to get back to a situation where employers want to hire, and that means that they have a sense that things are going right. And it's too soon to tell, I would say, whether the longer-run outlook is going to be good for employment.
Can there be measurable gains in the economy, generally speaking, without improvement on employment?
Well, if there's uncertainty, employers will try to skimp on bringing new people in. You know, you hold off. You wait as long as possible because it costs money to train people, and you don't want to have to lay them off again. So you wait until it looks really good, and you limp along with your existing data labor force. That's the worry, that this could go on for some time. And it could go on. My worry is that this recession will end technically, but the recovery will be very weak, and we are going to be disappointed for years. That has happened before, and after a crisis like this, I worry that it will happen again.
Go deeper into those unemployment numbers, if you would, Professor Shiller, for just a moment, because does 9%, even 10% reflect what's really going on when you include all of those people in this country who are underemployed?
Well, that's another thing. Yeah, we have discouraged workers. The unemployment rate is defined as the percent of people in the labor force who are looking for a job. And if you say that you're not looking for a job, you're not in the labor force. And the problem is that many people are just discouraged. And so it's actually worse. I like to look at the number of jobs lost. It's, as I said, 6.5 million jobs, making this the worst recession since the Great Depression. And that is just a cloud over the spirit of business. I think we've done remarkably well since the Obama administration came in. I think it's surprising that their stimulus package, meager as it was, has actually brought confidence back up. A year ago, the confidence numbers were much lower. So something, I think animal spirits is a bit hard to predict. We have an inspirational, still charismatic, and still admired president, and we're moving ahead surprisingly well.
Those animal spirits that you speak of, that consumer confidence, it's such an intangible element, isn't it? I mean, how do you really measure how people are actually feeling?
Well, George Akerlof and I argue in our book that we need a revolution in macroeconomics. The theory that underlies most analysis has people as completely rational. There's no psychology in it. And unfortunately, it's the psychology which is the biggest driver of the economy. That's the animal spirits. We have to rethink our models. And George and I are not capable of doing this alone. I think we need to redirect our energies in macroeconomic research.
Here's a call from Charlottesville, Virginia. Professor Schiller, Ned is on the line. Ned, welcome to On Point.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'd just like to point out that, in my opinion, one of the major factors that's holding consumer confidence down is fear-mongering from the right. They are using unbelievably exaggerated language to make the problem seem serious or more serious than it is, although it is serious. But there's a senator who publicly said that, oh, $1 trillion deficit, that's if each dollar was a second, that's 317,000 years. In fact, the workers of America can pay off $1 trillion at $39 a month over 30 years. And so I'm just tired of having people who don't like Obama and have just a purely political agenda trying to wreck this country.
All right, Ned, thank you. Professor Schiller, what do you make of it? Fear-mongering, things not as bad as they're being portrayed to be?
Well, I think Ned is right that we can't let fear of the deficit at this point halt the stimulus package. But this is predictable. This is the same thing that happened to the Roosevelt administration. And it's tragic, actually. The Roosevelt administration in 1933, at the bottom of the Depression, launched a pump priming. That was their word for a stimulus package. But people started to worry about the deficit and the national debt, and they were worried about inflation, and the politics turned against Roosevelt, and he couldn't continue the stimulus package, even though it was really needed to get the economy out of the Depression. The same thing is happening again.
Well, talk about this sort of weak recovery that you're describing. Even a double dip recession, I've read, where you've mentioned that. What is that, and is that a real possibility?
I think it is, unfortunately, a real possibility. Right now, we are kind of encouraged by the sense that, well, we have an index of leading indicators that's up. We have various indicators that are up, and economists say this is just another recession, so it should end about by now. But if it doesn't get sufficiently better, people are going to start wondering. And that same doubt will, you know, these doubts tend to be self-fulfilling prophecies. So we could then fall into another recession. Even I keep making comparisons with the Great Depression, which I think is entirely right, although it won't be as bad this time. The Great Depression had a recovery and a second recession all as part of it. Mm. So we could have the same thing. We have a recovery, things look good, but then they get worse again, and years go by, and we still haven't gotten back to normal economy.
What about an L-shaped recovery, where we sort of maintain the status quo? We've hit the bottom, but we're not going up. I mean, do you foresee that? Do you foresee 10% unemployment for years?
Well, it's really hard to say. I worry about that possibility because we are in a difficult confidence situation. We have seen three bubbles, a bubble in the stock market, a bubble in the housing market, and a bubble in the energy, or broadly, commodities market. All of them burst. That has been a bad indicator in the past. We look at similar thing happened in Japan in the 1980s, peaking around 1990 in both housing and stocks, and that led to a bad economy for, hey, almost 20 years. Now, I think it could have been worse in Japan, and it wasn't the Great Depression. The Japanese government stimulated the economy, and it's actually okay. It's no disaster, no nightmare, but it's been slow there for a long, long time, and that's what I worry about here.
Well, we've finally been able to reach Professor Jeremy Siegel, Professor of Finance at the Wharton School of University of Pennsylvania. Professor, glad to have you with us. Sorry for the disruption there.
I'm happy to be here.
Thank you, Professor. How do you see the health of the U.S. economy? We've just heard Professor Robert Shiller's take. Have we hit bottom, to your mind?
I think we have. I think I'm a bit more optimistic than my good friend Bob. I think we have hit bottom. I think when the National Bureau, who is the arbiter of the calling of our recessions, looks back, they'll say that May and June will be the bottom. Now, that still will make it the longest recession in post-war history. And as we now have new data from the Commerce Department last week, it is the deepest. But interestingly, not by a large margin, marginally deeper, especially if we get growth, as I and most economists expect in this third quarter that we have now started. Estimates are for 2.5% GDP growth, and I've seen some estimates of 4% for the fourth quarter.
Hmm. What about jobs? Let's listen, before I ask the question, to former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan. He was hopeful about the state of the job market in a Sunday interview with ABC's This Week.
The unemployment rate is going to continue to rise, but more slowly than it's been. We'll continue to have job loss, but that's slowing as well.
With job loss, jobs still scarce, what kind of recovery can we expect, if any, on that front, Professor Siegel?
Well, we all know that the unemployment rate is a lagging indicator. There's several reasons for that. One is actually that as things get better, people hear about it and they start entering the job market and actively search, and then suddenly they're counted as unemployed. Actually, it's interesting that one of the records we don't want to hit, which was 10.8% unemployment, which we had in November of 1982, a lot of economists thought, oh, we're going to get above that. Now I hear many that say, hey, we're going to stay below that. Now, that's still too high. Obviously, we'll probably peak above 10. But certainly, even as Bob said, it's miles away from the Depression, which was 25%, and I think actually measured comparable to the way we measured today would be over 30% back then. I think we're going to have a surprisingly good recovery. Especially encouraged by what I see around the world, which is a strong recovery, particularly in Asia. We're very globally synchronized now. Markets and even business cycles. And if we do have strong growth in Asia and even a recovery in Europe, I think we will follow through here in the U.S.
Professor Shiller, are you optimistic? Are you encouraged by signs of global recovery?
Well, certainly. Stock markets over the whole world have been up since March. And this reflects, I think, a boost in confidence all over the world. And Jeremy is absolutely right. The world is linked. We have a global economy now, and there are positive signs.
Let's go to the phones. John is on the line from Des Moines, Iowa. John, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Hi.
I listen all the time. Great topics, always. I'm not an expert on the economy. but I do have common sense and I do follow this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I see, first of all, financing both wars with these supplementals put us into big doo-doo. And also, this country is not of, by, and for the people anymore, as far as I'm concerned. It's of, by, and for the corporation. And my example is this Cash for Clunkers program. They went through $1 billion real quick and wanted a couple billion more. When we bailed out these gigantic financial corporations to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, and they continue to pay their executives bonuses, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I'd like the experts to talk about programs that actually help individual people, like this Cash for Clunkers program, and compare that to the amount of money that was funneled into these bailouts.
All right, John.
I'll just listen to the answers.
I appreciate your call. Thanks so much. Before I turn to the professors, here's Alan Greenspan, former Federal Reserve Chairman, talking about the overwhelming response to the Cash for Clunkers program. He said it was a good sign for the economy in a Sunday interview on ABC.
There is no doubt that that very extraordinary response that we saw is a very important indicator that the state of confidence in the economy is beginning to pick up.
Professor Schiller, Professor Siegel, what do you make of this Cash for Clunkers program? John's not so sure about it. Professor Siegel?
I think it's great. I think the Senate should go ahead. We're getting the expenditures right away. I mean, one of the criticisms of the Obama spending plan was that it's too slow at getting these infrastructure projects started, moving all the way through 2010. The earlier we could get stimulus, the better. I hope the Senate follows through here.
Professor Schiller?
I think Cash for Clunkers is so tiny relative to our economic situation that it's kind of a joke. I think John from Des Moines brought up a very important point of what's really important that's mattered. He said that the country is no longer of, by, or for the people. This is one of the consequences of this crisis, that people are angry. They think that we've bailed out the rich people, and they're not going to tolerate this. I'm worried about what that anger will do in interfering with our economic system. This is a really important force. I think the inequality of incomes is going to be a bigger issue. We have to work to make our financial markets be clearly working for the benefit of the people. And this is something we a project for us over years to come.
Professor Schiller, your comments remind me of a quote we have here from our website. Most of the recovery, says Joe B., is taking place on Wall Street, thanks to the hundreds of billions of dollars they got from hardworking, poor, and middle-class taxpayers. Who is hurt most by this recession? Is it the middle class? Is it the poor, Professor Schiller?
Well, I say it's definitely any recession harms the poor more, or middle class. I mean, I don't know exactly where to draw the line, but we are seeing foreclosures at an alarming rate. We're seeing unemployment is going to hit people who don't have savings. It puts them in a terrible bind. And this is something that is going to affect our psychology going forward. People realizing that they've run up big credit card debt and they thought it could go on forever, and now they're out of a job and then they lose their house. This is a catastrophe at a level for middle class and lower income people.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about a way out of economic crisis this hour and whether recovery might be in the cards. We're joined this hour by Robert Schiller, professor of economics at Yale University, and by Jeremy Siegel, professor of finance at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Here's former Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan appearing on Sunday on ABC's This Week. He said the worst of the economic recession is behind us.
I'm pretty sure we've already seen the bottom. In fact, if you look at the weekly production figures for various different industries, it's clear that we've turned perhaps in the middle of last month, the middle of July.
And at a town hall meeting in Raleigh, North Carolina last week, President Obama said the recession wasn't over, but real progress has been made.
I don't know whether you've seen the latest cover of Newsweek magazine on the rack at the grocery store, but the cover says the recession is over. Now, I imagine that you might have found the news a little startling. I know I did. Here's what's true. We have stopped the free fall. The market's up, and the financial system is no longer on the verge of collapse.
Well, with those words, we'll turn back to the phones, people who are actually living it. In Columbus, Georgia, here's Tommy on the line. Tommy, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
A little bit about my background. I don't feel like that I was any part of this financial meltdown. I don't have a credit card. I haven't owned a credit card since the early 90s, and I pay rent in an apartment, and I actually own all of my possessions. But at the same time, I've been unemployed since the 19th day of May of this year, and at this point I'm living out of my savings account, and I have two main skills. I'm a craftsman. I can hand build furniture and doors and staircases and things like that. And I have 4 years of military experience, and I did a tour in Iraq in 2003. And in this 2.5 months of unemployment, I have sent my resume and or a combination thereof of filling out applications to 47 different companies, and I still don't have a job. So I don't feel like I contributed to this recession because I wasn't burdened with credit card debt. I didn't buy a house that I couldn't afford, and I have skills, but I don't have a job. To me, it doesn't feel like this recession is over at all. I guess that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Tommy, thanks for calling. Good luck to you. Professor Siegel, there's Tommy. He says he lives responsibly, no credit cards, applied for 47 jobs. Not a lot of hope for him on the horizon. Certainly recession isn't over for him.
No, not for a while. And, that is what happens is that, you say who is responsible. We're going to argue, one could argue for a long time about why this happened. But it's everyone gets hurt, and especially those that whose job wasn't secure and did not have security in the job. They're going to be hurt the most. They have been hurt the most. I will say that I think that by the fourth quarter, we're going to get positive job growth in these important monthly numbers that we get in employment. And that's a great sign because it's been more than a year when we've been hemorrhaging these jobs. So if Tommy can hold out a little longer, this Christmas won't be as bleak as it has been in the past. I think we're going to see the improvement.
Professor Schiller, do you agree with your friend, Professor Siegel? Expect fourth quarter
job generally
growth?
I generally do. Jeremy is an old friend, except for one thing, that he's generally bullish and I'm generally bearish. Maybe we're both a little bullish right now. But, the real problem that Tommy gets at is that this situation seems really unfair, that the people who cause the problems are not the ones that are suffering. And, Tommy, he has skills. He wants to use them. He's served his country. And I think it's just tragic that there are millions of people in that category who are suffering right now. And that's why it's very important that we continue. I think that the job is not – all this talk about the recession is over, maybe it is, but we have a big job to do to make the – capitalist economy work better for the people. I wrote another book about that called Subprime Solution, but the theme is we have to democratize our financial institutions to make them work. And people are angry about these bonuses. They're angry about some things that happened on Wall Street. We have to go back to the fundamentals and improve this to make capitalism work for the people much better.
Let's go to Lincoln, Massachusetts. Sam is on the line. Sam, welcome to On Point.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. The last comment about capitalism, boy, couldn't be more on target. I think the anger is a good thing because I think more and more people are beginning to realize that when an economic system is organized around corporate profits, and in particular the profits of FIRE, finance, the insurance industry, and real estate, it's not good for the majority of people. People are looking out of their windows and they're saying, there's a lot of work to be done here. The schools are a mess. The roads are a mess. And there are tons of people to do the jobs. Something is fundamentally wrong when there's tons of work to be done and tons of people out of work, and if a system can't organize to take advantage of that, there's something wrong with the system. And the other thing I'd point out is that the average person, which I consider myself a member, doesn't really care about financial markets. What they really care about is their standard of living. And what people are beginning to realize, I think, is this is not new information. This is part of a trend that's 30, almost 40 years old of continual decline in the standard of living. My father was a librarian. My mother didn't work. Sent all of his kids to college. We had two cars, and we went on vacation every summer for a couple of weeks. This is on a librarian salary. This was in the 60s and late 70s. He went to undergraduate school and graduate school on the GI Bill. The American dream now is so far in the past that there are whole generations who don't buy it anymore. We're talking about the 50s and the 60s. That's like 45
years long ago. Yeah, Sam, I hear your point. I'm so glad that you called. Professor Schiller, can we expect the standard of living, to Sam's point, to continue to decrease as we move forward?
Well, we don't. But Sam is bringing up what I think ought to be the most important thing. It's not this recession. It's the rising economic inequality. He's absolutely right. This has been going on for decades, and it could get much worse. And I think we have to have a plan to prevent this from getting worse. It has a number of elements, but I've written a paper among one of them. I think we have to have a tax system. Len Berman and I have written a paper called The Rising Tide Tax System, and our proposal as part of a plan to attack this problem would be to have a tax system that's indexed to inequality. You can find it on the web. It's a serious proposal. But I don't think that politicians want to talk about this very much because it's too loaded. We find it difficult. So we really are talking about this recession as if that's the problem. The problem is deeper and more fundamental.
Here's Greg in Shenandoah, Virginia. Greg, welcome to On Point.
Hi.
Yeah,
I was just wondering, historically, as a perspective, or from the historical perspective, I know in the Reagan years, the budget, the deficit was in the trillions, or moved up into the trillions, and $300 or $400 billion deficit, budget deficit each year for him. And I would imagine that adjusts inflationally much higher to these days. What makes this historical situation unique compared to that? Is it sort of just the same thing over again, or is it different now?
Greg, thank you. Professor Siegel, what about the deficit?
Well, there was a deficit under Reagan when he went through with the tax cut, and I don't have it in front of me, but it is nowhere near the size, probably even on an inflation adjusted basis, as what we're expecting this year, which is, I believe, is a $1.5 trillion. I think that Reagan's deficit, and if my memory serves me well, was something in the order of 150 or 200 billion. And so we're talking here about something that may be up to 10 times the size. It's an unprecedented response, but I believe a necessary response given the tremendous economic blow that we have experienced. One of the wrong things that was done during the Great Depression was the belief that things will be better if we balance the budget. What Keynes showed is that when you have times of economic depression, you don't want to balance the budget. You need to spend. You need to give people relief on tax cuts. You need to increase public works. I think Obama has done the right thing. We can argue on what he's choosing to spend on, but I think the basic policy is the prescriptions that both Bob and I learned when we were in graduate school in economics together at MIT. And I think to that extent that the administration is doing the right thing.
Here's Amanda. She's in Florence, South Carolina. Amanda, welcome to On Point.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
I actually wanted to bring a little bit of a younger point of view to you. Good. I just graduated from college, and I will be turning 23 in a month.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the average debt coming out of college now is in the $40,000. And you can bankruptcy on credit cards, and you can bankruptcy on, you know, your mortgage. You can go bankrupt and, you know, have the government help you out almost anything. But student loans, there is no help out there. And also, I mean, I'm actually one of the few lucky ones. I'm one of the 20% of college students that was able to get a job out of college. And making $30,000 a year, I am unable to move out of my parents' house due to high cost of housing.
So what do you see on the horizon, Amanda? What do you see 5 years down the road for yourself?
Well, I mean, as of right now, trying to save up some money, but 5 years from now, 6 years from now, it's going to be probably about 13, I'm still going to be paying on my student loans. And it was, you know, without this college education, I couldn't get a job. But now that I have the job, I have to pay off the college education. And I had over three-fourths of my school in scholarships. But since scholarships haven't gone up, there's no help.
Amanda, thanks so much. Good luck. Professor Siegel, this goes back to the point of employment. She's parted 20% of her class with a job. I mean, can there be measurable gains in the economy without improvement on employment?
No, certainly, you know, the biggest part of the economy is consumption, and that means employment. I mean, the biggest drag on our economy right now is still the fear of losing your job. I've read one survey that said that up to one half the people are worried about losing their job. And anyone who's worried about losing their job is not going to spend on automobiles, on what we call those durable goods, those big ticket items. You just won't feel you can afford to do that. Now, the truth is, in my belief, is since we're near the peak of unemployment, nowhere near as many people who fear they're going to lose their job are, in fact, going to lose it. I what I'm hoping for as we see better figures in the labor market, that more people say, you know what, I think I can keep my job. And, you know, hopefully Amanda, who got a job, will also be able to keep it. And then that I think is one of the factors that is going to start the consumption, which has been the biggest drag really on the economy over the last year, moving again, is once people's fear of losing their job is lessened. And again, I'm saying that I'm hoping that's going to happen toward the end of this year.
Let's get another couple of calls in here. Jose is in Barnett, Vermont. Jose, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
Well, I'm calling for probably a million reasons, but I'll just give you one. I know time is short.
Yes.
One of the most useful things that I think that can come from the gentlemen that are on the program at the moment, as well as the administration, is to continue to assist the public in as clear a manner as possible that doesn't leave it in a strata of academia, but rather that brings it down to a everyman sort of language and translates so that people are less confused and less angry, because the public at large is left to do the work. I mean, we're responsible for the wealth that is in the hands of individuals and corporations. I mean, that's how it's created, in a matter of speaking. But on the other hand, we're left on the outside. People don't have the education to understand the complexities of our economic system. And the reality is that our country is a gigantic marketplace where, you know, it's always been the same. Grab as big a chunk of the pie as you can and run like the dickens.
It's a good point, Jose. I'm glad that you called. I'm sorry the clock's against me. But I wanted to get this last point in with Professor Schiller, Professor Siegel. Talk about the possibility of inflation on the horizon. How does inflation play into this conversation? Professor Schiller, you first.
Can I first say that I think Jose is making a point that is heard by Obama, that complexity of contracts is used to deceive people. And Obama's word, or Geithner's word, is plain vanilla. We want things simpler. Secondly, about inflation, that has been jumped around recently by oil price swings, but it hasn't shown a problem yet, even though the Fed has expanded the money stock and bank reserves. It's because we're in a serious recession. The Fed has to be on its toes to offset any incipient inflation tendencies. And I think they will be.
Professor Siegel,
I think Jeremy will agree on that, too, right?
Do you see inflation on the horizon? Yeah.
I agree with Bob there. I don't see any real inflation over the next year or two with a the labor unemployment rate that we have. Only thing I worry about is I don't want oil to go back to 140. That's going to be really bad for the economy. But as long as it stays in the area we have now, I don't think inflation is an immediate problem at all.
Are there parts of America that just won't recover from this recession? I'm thinking of places like Detroit. The car industry is so prevalent there. Professor Siegel?
I'm a Detroiter by birth.
Yeah, Professor Schiller?
I was just there. I have a lot of relatives. They're very worried. It's the Great Depression there right now.
That's right.
But I kind of have faith. You know, Michigan has a big, strong technological base. I think it will adapt to these circumstances, and it'll come around.
Professor Siegel, what do you think?
I think so. I mean, there's a Rust Belt reinventing itself all the time, and manufacturing jobs are not going to come back the way they used to. But our economy, I think, is flexible enough. We have created new jobs, and we will.
Many thanks to my guests, my panel this hour, Robert Schiller, professor of economics at Yale University, author of several books. Professor, always nice to speak with you. Thanks for your perspective.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it. Professor Jeremy Siegel, professor of finance at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Professor, thanks to you.
Thanks for having me today.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.